Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And I am very excited. One of my favorite shows on Breakthrough Thinking is Empowering Women, sponsored by Right Now or Highton & Lewis. And, of course, we have in studio one of the attorneys for Right Now or Highton & Lewis, Scott Wakefield. Scott, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you are welcome, of course, and we'll introduce your guests in a second. Of course, you were on the show, what, maybe 6 months ago or 8 months ago?
Yeah, something like that.
That was good. We talked about, you did some utility stuff back then, and now you sort of expanded out. But what do you do now?
Right. I do a lot of commercial transactional work, some of it still connected to utilities, development of renewable provisions, customers that want to put renewables on their facilities may ask for a review of their contracts with the renewable providers, and so I do some of that.
It's probably a good state to be that type of attorney, right?
Well, on days other than days like today, but fortunately there aren't very many days like today, and that's why we're a good state for renewables.
Yeah, boy, is it cold. But I'm really excited to introduce your guest, Empowering Women, and she's certainly a woman that's empowered and empowered other women. Chris Mays, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
This is great because you have quite the background. I was reading your background as like a who's who, and you look so young. And I was thinking, right, I just met you a couple minutes ago, and I thought, wow, how is Chris so young but accomplished so much?
Well, I don't know about that. I've been very blessed in my life, and I have had a little bit of a weird career. It's been all over the place.
Well,
my mother used to say she just can't keep a job. That's so that's the problem.
But. You've accomplished so much. I want to go over your background to set the stage. And where do you want to start? I mean, God, you got a School of International Public Affairs, Columbia University. Mm-hmm. Why don't you take us through your background?
Well, you know, I was born and raised in Prescott, Arizona, so I'm a native Arizonan from up north. And I went to Prescott High School, came down here to Arizona State University, got my bachelor's degree in political science, and then I became a newspaper reporter for the Phoenix Gazette, which is now defunct, and then the Arizona Republic. Covered politics for the Arizona Republic for 4 or 5 years, and then lost my mind and went to New York City and got my master's degree in public administration, public policy. Came back to the Arizona Republic to cover politics in the presidential campaign in 1999, 2000, back when McCain was running for the first time.
Yeah.
And as was Dan Quayle, and got to cover that campaign. Then I went to law school, lost my mind again, I guess, and went to law school and enjoyed that. I went to the law school here at ASU. And then wound up working for Janet Napolitano on her first gubernatorial campaign. Lo and behold, she won. We won by, I think, 11,000 votes. Not the biggest landslide in the world. And then became her communications director. And it was after that that she appointed me to the Corporation Commission, the Arizona Corporation Commission. And then I had to run in my own right. I had to run for my seat after that twice. And it's a statewide position. And Scott practiced for a long time in front of the commission. I also worked at the commission for a number of years. So we both have experience at this wonderful, wonderful organization. I often refer to the Arizona Corporation Commission, which is Arizona's Public Utilities Commission. They regulate all of Arizona's utilities as the most powerful branch of government that nobody knows about.
Oh, there you go. But you had to run twice, huh?
Yeah, so that was an experience.
Tell us about that. That's interesting because we're going to go into all your background, even a special surprise. What's your life? Remember that show? No, just kidding. We don't have that much of a surprise.
Okay.
She started to run, talking about running. No,
yeah.
But tell us about running for politics. tell us what that is like, because the average person never gets that opportunity.
Well, yeah, and you know, it was new to me, too. I think the last time I had run for anything was for student body president of Prescott High School. So I was exactly a
You
lifetime.
Were destined, though.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly, I guess. But it is a fascinating process, and I'm glad that I had this wonderful opportunity to do it. I'm glad that I did it. Not sure I'll do it again because I think you do sacrifice certain things like your weekends and some of your nights to go out and hit the rubber chicken circuit. But I've had my share of rubber chicken in my life. But you know, it's the great part of the Arizona Corporation Commission being elected is that it gives you the opportunity to go out and meet a whole lot of people. And I think this commission is one of the most open, transparent, and accessible to the public commissions in America. And not every public utilities commission is like that. So I really enjoyed the process of running from that aspect because it gave you the opportunity to go out and talk to people a lot.
That is great. And of course, that's you get a pulse of what people are thinking, the ones that do know about the Arizona Corporation Commission, right?
Yeah, and you get the opportunity to try to engage and educate folks and make sure that that they know what we're doing. And they do a lot. The commission does a whole lot for the state and is involved in policy making in a way that I think people don't necessarily realize.
Now, by the name, it's interesting. Is that a little misleading? Arizona Corporation Commission. I mean, they have, other than just public utility stuff, they do a lot more than that. Right.
So actually, most people's first engagement with the commission is when they form a corporation. When you form an LLC or you incorporate a business, you have to do that at the Corporation Commission. So, you know, a lot of people actually, when they go on the commission website, it's to go to StarPass to check out their existing corporation, to get a name for a corporation, that kind of thing. So that's actually the vast majority of the interface with the Corporation Commission. I suspect that ours is called the Corporation Commission instead of the Public Utilities Commission because at the time that the Corporation Commission was actually created in 1911-12, the founding fathers actually considered regulating all corporations in Arizona. Not just utilities. Not many people know this. This is a little known fact. Scott probably knows this, but when you go back and you read the minutes of the Arizona Constitutional Convention, you quickly find out just how, frankly, progressive the Republicans were. They were remember the trust-busting era back in the early 1900s? Yeah. They were very leery of corporations and really wanted to make sure that big corporations got a lot of regulation. Did not end up regulating all corporations in Arizona.
That would be really strange. How would that even work, though?
You'd be regulated by the Arizona Corporation. It wouldn't work well, obviously. But back then, you know, we didn't have that many corporations. Now, obviously, we have, you know, tens of thousands of corporations in the state of Arizona. And so it would be totally unwieldy.
That'd be amazing. I have a corporation as a CPA, and I'm just thinking, what would they do? Like regulate what I charge, or that's what they would do.
Yeah, basically.
It might help my practice. I have a lot of clients interested.
right.
Wow. We would be popular then, wouldn't we? Wow.
But yeah, it gives you a sense of. It also gives you a sense of how important the founding fathers viewed the Corporation Commission. When you look at the minutes of the Constitution, they actually spent more time debating what the commission should do and look like than they did the legislature and the governor.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
wow, that's now let me ask you, because you know, the show is empowering women. It's about women that are very empowered and really set the path and example for other women. That what's possible really is dependent on you know, one's own desire and determination. So, and I suspect you have a lot of desire and determination. Look, you've been a reporter, a politician. You're a professor right now, a law professor at ASU.
Yep.
You have your own law firm. Yep. I could go on and on. This is amazing. So, what advice would you give women? I mean, because. And let's ask a two-part question here, advice, but also in context to specific industries. Some might have a harder entrance in for women. Mm-hmm. So we could break it down by women in politics, women in professors at universities, women in private industry like your law practice, and women as a reporter. Wow.
Yeah.
We could go on and on. This could be a 13-part series, Scott. What do you think? You want to come back?
Please, I don't think your listening audience wants to listen.
I'm excited. So, do you know what I'm saying, though?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we discuss that? Is women, and then pick one of the industries and the entrance point. What does it take to really succeed as a woman in any of these industries?
Well, great question, and I think the answer, at bottom comes from. A woman's ability to and desire to listen to her heart and do what she really believes in and follow her heart. And I think that when you do that, when you do things that you're passionate about, that you love, then your talent and ability shine through. And that's what's going to get you ahead in whatever field you're in. I mean, whether it's politics or accounting or high finance or law or whatever it is, or teaching. If you do listen to your heart, follow your heart, and do that to the best of your ability. And it's interesting. I think that. One of the reasons that I was able to be successful is that I had two parents who loved me and who, never suggested for a minute that I couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to be, the first Major League Baseball player when I was a little girl. But, that didn't work out real well. But my parents never told me I couldn't. So, I ended up playing Little League. And, I think when little girls play sports, whether that's, Little League or softball or whatever, I think they learn competitiveness. And I did when I was a little kid. And that's fall in that competitiveness. As you saw, I've done a lot of things in my life, but I've been successful in each of those areas because I've been very competitive. And I think I learned that at a very young age.
That's interesting. I had another client one time who knew you from when you were on Little League with their son.
Uh-oh. Are you serious? Did they say that I was too competitive?
I don't recall that, but it was an interesting connection to someone in a field completely unrelated to what you do now.
How strange. That's interesting.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so, and I think that having parents who, or teachers, who really empower their kids to believe that they can do whatever they set out to do is really, really important. And so, whether that's a parent or a teacher or some sort of an adult in their life who can really sort of give them that confidence. And then it doesn't really matter what field they're in. I think that carries through.
That totally makes sense. And let me ask you just a couple things, then we'll go on a break. But Little League, we have some sports shows, so you really intrigued me on that one. What position did you play?
It's been a long time since I talked about this, Dave.
This is so cool.
Yeah. I also played badminton. I was a very good badminton player.
Really?
Yeah. So, and no jokes about the badminton, okay?
Yeah. I don't know enough to know about any jokes on it. So what position?
Second base.
Second base. Yeah. I was a second baseman, too.
Really? It's a great position.
And how was your hitting?
Not so good.
No?
A very good defense. But
I bet you were quick, right?
Yeah, I was pretty quick.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is so cool. Well, yeah. I'll tell you what. When we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Scott Wakefield and Chris Mays. And I'm going to ask a couple questions when we come back about beliefs and confidence, because I think that's really important and how that could cut through obstacles. Because all obstacles, in my opinion, are perceptions of one's mind. And when we come back, we'll discuss beliefs, confidence, obstacles in about 2 minutes.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Empowering Women, sponsored by Reitnauer, Heighton & Lewis. We have Scott Wakefield, a great attorney from the greatest law firm I have ever met. And I've met most of all the attorneys. I think you're expanding, so I haven't met all of them right now. But Reitnauer, Heighton & Lewis, they are phenomenal. Shout out to Jim Heighton, good buddy and tremendous attorney, Scott.
Yeah, I get to work with him on a lot of things.
He is so amazing. He's not like, you know, there's a stereotype for attorneys. He breaks the mold. And so does your firm. In fact, your firm just won the Standard of Excellence Award from Breakthrough Thinking. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Standard of Excellence Award. Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. All right. Anyway, and of course, we have Chris Mays in studio, law professor at the ASU in renewable energy type of stuff. That is good stuff. But before we get to that, why I'm so interested in beliefs and confidence and obstacles, you're probably curious, what is a CPA talking about perceptions of the mind? They don't learn that in school. I'm also neuro-linguistic programming. Have you heard of that?
Mm.
Tony Robbins, the most
yes.
well-known,
right.
all about psychology, and I'm a master practitioner. So I have very interesting curiosity, actually, on how the mindset affects empowerment and confidence and beliefs. And you mentioned beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
If someone doesn't have, let's say a woman doesn't have a support system like you did,
right.
where you grew up knowing you could do anything,
mm-hmm.
and no was not part of your vocabulary when you wanted to accomplish things. If mm-hmm. someone grew up a little differently, where maybe they learn like, well, you can't do that, that's too hard, you don't have time, that's just for special people. How do you get past those obstacles? What advice would you give women? And I know one of them is just to follow your example because you've already proven it.
Yeah, that's a really hard question, Dave, because I've never been in that boat. But I've certainly seen a lot of women who have been and who've done wonderfully in their lives.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I mean, I think it's a matter of finding people and putting yourself in the presence of people
yeah.
who have that confidence, who are going to be supportive of you. So finding a supportive environment somehow, whether that's at your church or at your workplace or at your book club, you know, whatever it is, finding a supportive environment, finding other women and men who will be supportive of you. And then, you know, I think it's a matter of slowly building your own confidence in whatever area you've chosen to have a career. So it's harder. I think, you know, it's harder for those folks who don't come up in a family that provide that environment. But I think it certainly can be done.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like what you said is, who you hang around with makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You don't want to hang around with the people that it's a concept called misery loves company, and
right.
You don't want to be in that situation.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And we've all, I'm sure, found ourselves in places in our lives where we have surrounded ourselves with the wrong people and where we have surrounded ourselves with the right people. And I think there are huge differences in results. Even the best of us, I think, can you know, find ourselves, you know, hanging around with people who are probably either don't have the right attitude or aren't headed in the same direction. So,
yeah, I agree. I think it's a big topic, and not just for women, anyone really that has a belief system of doubt that they don't think they deserve it or they don't think they're capable of it. They really are. I mean,
absolutely.
You just have to, know that other people have done it. So why not you?
Right, absolutely. And then sort of success begets success, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think you get a few successes under your belt and then things can take off for you. But and obviously life has its ups and downs and obstacles that you've got to get over. And certainly I've found it interesting in my own life to understand and you know what it's like to overcome obstacles, to go through periods where things were going swimmingly, and then to go through suddenly a period where they really weren't. It's been interesting to me, to be honest, to have been in public office for 7 or 8 years, and then to not have been in public office, and you know what that you know all of a sudden go from being the decision maker, the one in the big chair, to one who's not the decision maker anymore and is not in the big chair. And I think I'm really actually glad that and thankful that I got out of politics at the time in my life that I did, because I don't think that I'm going to have that sort of, I think some people who stay in politics for too long get a sense of unreality in their lives. And so I'm back in reality, and I think that's a healthy thing to go back and forth perhaps, or, you know, in my case, I'll probably stay in reality for a long, long time.
Well, let me ask you that. I was going to ask you something else, but you've intrigued me now. You said unreality. What is the unreality part of politics that you notice?
You know, I think, you know, the fact of the matter is people treat you differently. And so I think, you know, the successful politicians are the ones who keep their feet on the ground, who understand that this is not, you know, the real world, and that who maintain a sense of modesty and a sense of a realization that you're not going to be the one making the decisions and calling the shots forever, and that you shouldn't be the one making those, that this is an honor and it's temporary, and that eventually that honor will go to someone else, and the voters will have an opportunity to have other people in office.
Well, I like what you said, and that's what makes you so unique as a person and as a woman and as an empowering woman, too, because it seemed like you knew during the time it was an honor, that, and that's a credit to you, that it wasn't that, hey, I have power and I can just sort of do what I want.
No.
But it was an honor and a privilege, it sounds like, to help and serve others.
Oh, absolutely. I wasn't perfect, and I'm sure the lawyers who practiced in front of me didn't think I was perfect either, and they probably got a little frustrated with me from time to time. But you know, I think all of the lawyers who practiced in front of the commission when I was there would say that I worked my butt off, and I did that because I honestly, truly believe that this is a huge privilege to serve on the Arizona Corporation Commission, and that I just hoped at the end of it that the ratepayers and the voters of Arizona felt like they got their money's worth with me. And that's, you know, and so I worked very, very hard. So, yeah, I do think it's an honor and a privilege. And, you know, you get to be there for a little while, and hopefully people make the most of it.
You know, that's excellent to hear, because that also, I believe, is part of empowerment, knowing the reasons why you're doing what you're doing. And if it's for egotistical purposes, for power alone, for money alone, that's short-lived. But if it's to serve, to help, to give what you can while you're you have the ability to give, that seems like much higher level reasons.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's a great point, Dave. And I think that, you know, I think I'll look back on that 10-year period of my life that I spent most of my 30s at the commission and in public service as 10 of the best years. Not monetarily, doesn't pay that great,
yeah.
But because I had the chance to serve. You know, I had the chance to serve Arizonans, and, you know, I love Arizona more than almost anything, and except my family. And I had that opportunity, and I think there's something about service. So going back to your original point about empowering women, that is so gratifying, whether you're a man or a woman. But it is one of the highest callings, and I think you can serve in a lot of different ways, whether you're a teacher or you're in the military or in public life, or even in healthcare. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to serve, but that's, I think it's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
And you have to really, I believe, think above yourself. It's not about yourself, but it's
right.
Beyond or above yourself. It's from a selfish state to a selfless state. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, and there's something truly enjoyable about that, you know. And I now, you know, having been in a position where I worked in journalism, then was in public service, and now I'm a professor and an attorney, I think there's something truly engrossing and enjoyable about service that you just can't get in any other way, I think. So yes, it's about thinking above yourself, but in thinking above yourself, I think you can achieve a level of enjoyment and personal fulfillment in your life that you just can't get anywhere else.
The reward is the joy of giving.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you know, and I think sometimes people who are in public service, and Scott was too. He worked for the Residential Utility Consumers Office, so he was very much in public service and worked as a state employee for many years. And then before that, he worked at the commission. But you may not know it when it's happening to you. You may not know that you're enjoying yourself as much as you are in service. I think sometimes I didn't know how great it was, but I think you do when it's over with.
I think, boy, that's a really a great credit. And for the listeners out there, really take that advice seriously. It's not about yourself. Go above yourself and find the joy there and really serve, and things will happen. It's just that, you know, I think the collapse of the economy had a lot to do with short-term thinking, greed thinking, and about me.
Right.
And it collapsed, unfortunately. And why don't we take a quick break now? We're speaking with Scott Wakefield, and special in-studio guest, we have Chris Mays. And when we come back, I want to ask you about sports again, because we have a sports show. I want to ask you what your favorite sport is, because maybe we'll get you on the sports show, interview some of the athletes.
Ooh,
I can't wait.
That'd be great.
Wow, this is exciting. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed Metropolitan Opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is an law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Empowering Women, sponsored by Reitenauer, Hyten and Lewis. Scott Wakefield, great attorney from Reitenauer, Hyten and Lewis, in studio with special guest Chris Mays, a law professor at ASU, and your own law firm, the Chris Mays Law Firm. I wanted to say the Chris Mays Show because you are so good on the radio. Right, Scott? She is phenomenal.
She's very good. She's always been a great public speaker.
Well, oh, better, I could better tell. Voice than face, that's for sure.
Oh, no. You're beautiful and you have a great voice.
Thank you.
Right, Scott?
Yes.
See, there we go. I didn't have to.
I hope my wife's not listening.
Oh, yes, she is. She's on line one. Okay. Should we take your wife on line one or not? Okay, maybe not. Tom, our producer, don't take line one. Anyway, we ended up a little bit talking about sports, and on the break you said your favorite sport is football.
I'm a football girl, Dave.
That's cool. Football. Yeah. Wow.
Love the NFL. I'm a couch potato on Sunday.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah.
How many games did you watch yesterday?
Three.
Which ones?
Well, I watched, of course, the Cowboys last night play the Giants. Very sad. I didn't watch to the very end. Apparently, they lost.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm apologize to
That's
the
okay.
to the listeners. So as I was telling you on the break, growing up in Prescott in Arizona, when I was growing up here back in the 70s, we didn't have a football team. We didn't have the Cardinals.
Yeah.
So you loved the Chargers, the Broncos, or the Cowboys. So I was a Cowboys girl.
And, well, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Cowboys at University of Phoenix Stadium playing the Cardinals. Were you shocked?
Deeply conflicted by that game.
Yes.
But shocked, a little bit shocked. Well, you know, the Cowboys are so erratic, you know, and I love Tony Romo, but, you know, he's just up and down and all over the place, you know, and they've been hot for a while, but, you know, I don't trust.
Yeah.
I just don't trust
them. And they lost last night, you said.
They lost.
That's tough.
By 3 points.
That's rough for them now.
Oh, my. Now, I mean, I think the Giants are in first place in the division. So,
oh,
I mean,
my.
Now they control their own destiny. And what are you going to do? I mean, boy. You know, if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm not happy about this.
No. That's got to be bad. I mean, something will happen if they don't make the playoffs.
Don't you think?
Yeah. That won't be good. They may be, who knows what they'll do. But another game, you watched the Cardinals and the Niners?
I, of course, watched the Cardinals, and what a game, huh?
Amazing. Cardinals.
Wow.
Five out of the last six games winning.
They came alive.
Incredible.
What happened?
Defense, phenomenal defense. They finally gelled. Mm-hmm. Skelton comes in for the injured Cobb, and
pulls off
a nice game.
Well, what do you got now? Now do we have a quarterback controversy again? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. It makes it tough. I've got to tell you, because Fitzgerald, what a game he had! Two of those great catches,
yeah.
And then a phenomenal block for early for
Doucette. Oh, did you see the block for Doucette?
Was that amazing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, to attitude. I mean, there's a guy with great attitude. Yeah. Somebody who's always playing. Who's all, you know, even when the cameras aren't on him, you know, he's always playing. So that's good stuff.
That is really good stuff. So that's exciting. We're going to have to get you on the sports show too.
That'd be fun. I mean, I don't know. I'm probably exhausted by my knowledge.
Here's the contract. You know, an attorney. Oh wait, I'm here with two attorneys. What's going on here? Anyway, this is great. Anyway, I thought I would just talk a little about sports because you seem like a great sports person.
Love it. Love sports. Yeah.
Wow.
Especially the NFL. I got to admit. Not as much the college football, but I'll watch, you know, the local teams.
But do watch the championship college the thing, LSU and Alabama.
Yeah, that's
good game there.
Ooh. Absolutely. This and that Heisman trophy contest was good too.
That's a good one. Griffin, I think.
Griffin got it.
Quarterback. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Could be another controversy in quarterback if the Cardinals take Griffin in the first round. Uh-oh. Andrew Luck is available. Maybe Matt Barkley from SC. Wow, this is a sports show now. What is going on here? We're empowering many people now.
Absolutely.
Okay. So thank you for that. And let's go back to, I didn't ask you what the third game is you watched.
You know, I'm trying to remember what early game I watched. I think I only caught the tail end of it, so I'm spacing on it. What was on?
What was the
early game?
Yeah,
on
I was watching
CBS.
That too.
It was Washington against the Patriots, and I really dislike the Patriots. I hate to be negative here, but.
Okay.
I'm not a big Patriots fan, and I don't know. I'm not a big Brady, Tom Brady, Belichick. That whole sort of thing going on up there. I'm not so sure about that. So,
but I do want to mention one person that I think is been consistent with what we're talking about in beliefs and so on. A quarterback that's everyone said there's no way, despite being a phenomenal college quarterback. Said there's no way he'll succeed in the NFL.
Drew Brees.
Drew Brees.
Just Drew Brees? Okay.
Tim Tebow.
Oh, now there's an interesting situation.
Incredible story. Mm-hmm. They're down 10-0 yesterday with a few minutes left. I read the paper. They won 13-10.
Yeah.
This guy is like 6-1 since he started.
Yeah.
It's his mindset.
I think so, because everybody says his mechanics are terrible. So it's got to be his mindset. I mean, he's just a winner, and he goes in there and, you know,
and
he believes. He believes, and, you know, there's this whole controversy about him. I'm not sure I understand it. You know, people think that he, you know, wears his religion on his sleeve too much, whatever. But the guy wins.
He wins. And he's evidently a very nice human being.
Sounds like it.
And he gives inspiration, motivation, uplift his teammates to higher performance levels.
Yeah.
He pulls it out in the fourth quarter. They were down. They just scored. It's 10-0 with 2 minutes left. They score 10-7, 2 minutes left. How did they get the ball again? The guy kicks a 59-yard field goal, tie it up. They win it in overtime. There's something magical about
it. I was just going to say, it's magic.
Yeah,
something
it is.
Magical. But I maybe more than that, you know.
Well, it's the beliefs, and it's just knowing and having confidence. Exactly what you said earlier, phenomenal. I want to get Tim Tebow on the show.
Oh, you should.
That's incredible. So
yeah, absolutely.
Very exciting. Anyway, away from sports now, even though it's beyond sports because we're talking about empowering people. Let me ask you about some of the obstacles that you've encountered as a woman. In politics, we'll start, and then maybe we'll talk about other industries as well.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I used to say, when I got this question when I first came onto the commission, I used to say, you know, I don't think of myself first as a woman in politics, but rather just someone who happens to be on the Corporation Commission who happens to be a woman. But that's probably a little oversimplified. I mean, the fact of the matter is I am a woman. I was a woman on the commission. I was the only woman on the commission for most of my tenure until Commissioner Kennedy came on board, and then there were two. Prior to my time, there weren't very many women. I think there were only four or five in the history of the commission, four or five, maybe six now with Commissioner Burns, but not very many. Very, very male-dominated area.
Wow.
It generally is. Utility law, utility practice, and public utilities commission is very, very male-dominated. So To say that I, you know, that being a woman didn't have an impact both on me and probably on the commission is just not probably accurate. Obstacles. I think that sometimes in environments like that one, in politics and environments where it's mostly male dominated, it's harder for women to be tough and to be aggressive without being viewed negatively. And so I think that, you know, and I was tough and aggressive. I mean, I don't know if Scott
was.
Oh, we got some stories here, do we?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he does, definitely. You know, and so I think I learned to calibrate that a little bit and to be maybe a little less brash. And this wasn't really so much about being a woman as being young, I think. And I think I was too brash in my early years on the commission. And maybe not, I could have used a little maybe more humility and a modesty and deference to my colleagues, perhaps, than I exercised when I first got on the commission. You know, when you're young, you think you kind of know it all, right, a little bit.
And you were really young.
I was very young. I was 32, and that was
one of the youngest ever?
Yeah, I think I was, if not the youngest ever, then one of the youngest ever.
Wow.
Statewide elected officials, and so I grew up a little bit in the job, I think, and so I think I learned to be more deferential and be a little calmer.
You seem pretty calm to me.
Scott calm. Probably remembers a few times where I was not so calm. So I, you know, I'm not sure if that was something that I needed to do, or something that I did because I was young, or something that was an obstacle because I was a woman. But and so maybe it's true that men have an easier time being brash and being aggressive and tough than women. I think that probably is true, without being perceived negatively. And I think that's just a matter of learning your way through it.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to deal with that. And I think women everywhere, whether they're accountants or lawyers or teachers, I think they all figure that out as they go along.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have a lot of women clients, and I notice that, you know, it's challenging because you don't want to come off, you know, too aggressive or assertive. There's, you know, there's a certain label for that, and which we won't say. And then you don't want to come across too cutesy because there's a label for that.
And not serious.
Yeah, and it's a very difficult where men maybe have that advantage where it's sort of built into the culture. That's how they're expected to act. And I find it interesting. I see that, and the result is this. Most of my women clients still say it's a male-dominated world out there, and so my female clients have me negotiate most of their stuff, whether it's with IRS or lease negotiations or something. Mm-hmm. And my male clients, they don't. They will start to negotiate, and then I have to come in and clean up because they mess
so
up.
So the women get it right.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. That's the whole point. So right. I did, you know, I did design a seminar using neurolinguistic programming called Negotiation Skills for Women Only. Design, yeah, and it's all on an unconscious level and it's more not about the CPA or business consulting, but the mindset, how they can level the playing field on an unconscious level so they don't have to be extreme.
Right.
Hey, well, I'll share it off there. I'll show you
one day. That'd be interesting, yeah. You know, and I think that this is such an interesting topic because I think over time this will get better for women. I mean, really, you know, young women coming up today, many, many, many of them are going to end up in the workplace in one form or another. And, you know, more than 50% of all the people now going to law school are women. And so they increasingly occupy positions of power and influence. And so just this by virtue of time moving on, I think is going to become less of an issue. I mean, you look at presidential politics. I'm a presidential politics junkie, so I watch a lot of C-SPAN and all the Republican presidential debates. And, you know, it used to be such a big deal that we had a woman running for president, Hillary Clinton. Oh, my goodness, you know, is that so novel? Well, now you have Michelle Bachmann, and nobody pays any more attention to the fact that there are women running for president.
Which is a good thing.
It is a good thing.
It changes the cultural perceptions that, wait a minute, it's the talent of the individual, the skill sets, and the wisdom, and that's all that should ever matter.
Right. And then, so it just becomes, and I saw a poll recently, or heard about a poll recently, where I think more than 70% of Americans said they would be willing to vote for a woman for president. So, you know, you can only imagine that 10 years ago that number was lower.
Yeah, I would venture to say that is quite correct. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with special in-studio guest Chris Mays, a great law professor on renewable energy. We'll get into that a little bit more the last segment. Of course, we have Scott Wakefield, a great attorney from Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis. This is Empowering Women. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Empowering Women. What is this? Second Monday of every month from 2 to 3, sponsored by Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis. And, of course, we have one of the great attorneys of Reitenauer, Hyten & Lewis in studio, Scott Wakefield, along with very special guest Chris Mays, who has a very interesting background, the Chris Mays Law Firm, as well as a law professor at ASU Utility Law. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that right now. Of course, you do a lot with renewable energy as well as when you were on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Talk a little bit about that, because I think off there you're telling me you were part of setting the standard for 2025, the standard of 15% renewable energy for Arizona. Talk a little bit about that.
Right. So back in 2006, the Corporation Commission, and I was on the commission at the time, set the current renewable energy standard. It's called the RES, and it's Arizona's Renewable Portfolio Standard, and it basically tells all of our utilities that they must begin to diversify their energy portfolios with some renewables, with some solar energy, some wind energy, biomass, landfill gas, geothermal, these renewable energy sources. And the whole idea, Dave, was to try to get our utilities, wean our utilities off of more volatile fossil fuels, volatile in the sense of cost. Natural gas prices were all over the board in the 2000s, and maybe again in the future. Coal, as we know, is getting more and more expensive as the government continues to regulate it. And you know, when our utilities do just coal and natural gas, that exposes the ratepayers to whatever shocks come from that volatility or come from those regulations. You know, you and I and Scott and the rest of Arizona is paying for that. You know, that ain't the utilities. That's going to be ratepayers who ultimately are the ones who have those costs passed on through to them. So the idea was to shield those ratepayers from those shocks by telling our utilities, look, you've got to diversify. I mean, it's like in finances, in personal finances, you don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? You don't advise your clients to, you know, just do T-bills or to just do, you know, the stock market. You advise them to diversify a little bit. So that's the idea behind that. And contained within that standard, Dave, is the nation's most ambitious solar rooftop requirement basically tells our utilities, okay, you got to do 15% renewables, but within that 15%, 30% must come from you helping people put solar panels on the rooftops, either individual homeowners or businesses.
Phenomenal. And then, of course, energy efficiency standards as well,
yeah.
At 22%?
Yeah, so we also established the nation's most ambitious energy efficiency standard at 22% by 2020, and that's basically the negawatt. That's the energy that we don't produce, and it's the cheapest form of energy of all. The average price of a kilowatt hour in Arizona right now is about 8.5 cents. For energy efficiency, which is replacing light bulbs or making your home envelope more efficient or putting in an HVAC system that's more efficient, is about 2 to 3 cents. So if we go out and do all those things to buildings and to homes, it costs about 2 to 3 cents a kilowatt hour relative to 8.5 cents. Again, shielding the ratepayers. You know, why wouldn't you do as much energy efficiency as you possibly could if it's so much cheaper than it is to go out and build a new coal plant? And so that's why we did that.
It totally makes sense. And a couple questions regarding that I think are interesting. On our Green Roundtable, I think we went over this many times, is the 15%, how did you come up with 15? Could it have been higher? Should it have been lower? How did that process work?
Well, that's a great question, and the answer is it probably could have been higher. At the time, though, as Scott pointed out on a break, I think it was pretty high.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were setting that standard, we started setting the standard. We started the debate process back in 2003 when I first came on the commission. So it took us 3 or 4 years to actually get all the debate out of the way. And at the time we were doing that in 2003, 15% looked big.
It did, yes.
And so then came all the other states, and they set their standards at 20 or 25%. In the case of California, 33%.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So Colorado just went to 30%. So
Whoa.
Colorado is twice what our renewable energy standard is. And so that's you now we kind of look little compared to that.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, and we are a little compared to that. You know, Nevada is at 25%, New Mexico is at 20%, Arizona is really the lowest RPS in the Southwest. And so, I guess we kind of look okay next to maybe Utah, which only has a goal. They don't have a standard. But you know, so I think that we could go higher. I think probably we should go higher. I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but I certainly think that it's something that Arizonans would support. And, you know, the polls are off the charts on this, Dave. You know, more than 75-80% of Arizonans believe we ought to be doing more solar energy.
Interesting.
I mean, other than on a day like this, most days it makes a lot of sense. So vast support for it here in Arizona.
Which is good to hear. Now, let me ask you this. What is the difference between a goal and a standard? You mentioned... Who was it? Utah?
Utah
has a goal,
think,
but not
yeah.
a standard. Mm-hmm. What's the difference? Does one have penalties associated?
Well, one's the law. So it's the law in Arizona. APS, Tucson Electric Power, have to meet 15% by 2025.
Or they move to Utah. That's what it is.
And it's tough for a utility to move to Utah. So our standard is very modest in the ramp up. So it ramps up over time about 1.5% a year to 15% in total by 2025. It's really and the utilities are doing a bang up job of meeting it. In fact, APS is going to double that standard in the year 2015. They will have doubled their requirements. I think they'll be at 10% in 2015. Pursuant to the last rate case that APS had, they agreed to do more.
Good.
But anyway, so to answer your question, we could do more, and I think we probably should do more.
And there are penalties associated if you don't meet it?
Is yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so that...
Well, the commission can penalize the utilities, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's interesting. And do you monitor it every year
yes.
so people are on pace? Mm-hmm. And do you have benchmarks that if they're not there, they...
Yes, the commission does monitor it every year, and every year they approve implementation plans in which the utilities come in and say, okay, here's how we intend to meet the standard for this year, and here are all of our programs, and here's, you know, and that gives the commissioners the opportunity to look at what's happening out there. And something interesting happened on the way to the show with this one, which is that, you know, the utilities, when we first were setting this really ambitious solar carve-out, the ambitious solar rooftop requirement, said, oh, no, commissioners, we'll never be able to meet that. Arizonans will never want to put solar on the rooftops, so we're going to be under compliant. We're under compliant with this, you know, automatically from the get-go. Well, turned out thousands, tens of thousands of Arizonans wanted to put solar on their rooftops, and the utilities are... meeting the standard, exceeding it, and it's going very well.
Wow, that's good to hear. So that could draw more solar-type companies.
It is. It absolutely is. That's a great point. So what's happening is we've seen a situation from 2003 to today in which, you know, we went from maybe having a handful of solar installers and companies to, you know, several hundred solar installers.
Yeah, I mean, I frequently see trucks on the road for Solar City or another solar installer, or what was just an electric contractor also has now added solar installation on its logo as
Excellent.
To part of what it does.
That's good.
It is good. And so we've created, jobs in this state, both associated with the solar standard and the energy efficiency standard. And I talked to one contractor doing energy efficiency projects who I had climbed up on somebody's roof to look at the insulation that they were doing and all the energy efficiency that they were installing. And the contractor said to me, you know what, Commissioner? I think 80% of 80% of the houses in this state need some form of energy efficiency. So you imagine the jobs that could be created associated with that work. And those are out-of-work construction workers that we can put back to work.
This is great. This is great strategic planning. I really congratulate you on that. More businesses, just regular businesses, should take a look at the process, at least, of planning something like this. And, we only have like a couple minutes left. Why don't we one last question, and then let's get your contact information out if you want. One is it seems like part of what the commission did was also shape behavior. Because it takes a shift of in the green area to change how people think and how people behave.
Yes, I think that's right, and but I think that ultimately, what's so wonderful about the renewable energy standard and the energy efficiency standard is that it matches nicely where Arizonans are and how they think. They're independent people. We're independent people. We want to produce our own energy. We want to make our homes more energy efficient.
which totally makes sense. So let's give out, do you want to give out maybe your contact information on your law firm? Or what
folks can contact me at a number of different places. My address, my email address at ASU is chris.mays@asu.edu. That's probably the best way to contact me. And, would look forward to talking to folks about renewable energy and energy efficiency and all sort manner of sustainability. You know, ASU is a hugely supportive university when it comes to sustainability, a major focus of that university.
That is so cool. We'll have to get you on the Green Roundtable.
I'd love to come.
We're going
to
get you on
and
there.
And the NFL stuff, don't forget.
Oh, no doubt about it. We will definitely do that. Scott Wakefield, how do they get in touch with you? And
you can call me at 602-254-9900 or email at swakefield@rhlfirm.com.
Thank you so much, Chris Mays. It's been an honor and a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Absolutely. And Scott Wakefield, thank you for coming on again. And thank you to Reitenauer, Height & Lewis. Stay tuned for Understanding Autism up at 3.
This is Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.
Hello, this is Michael Dixon. Internationally acclaimed metropolitan opera baritone Dmitri Varostovsky will perform a one-time-only opera gala concert with the Phoenix Opera Orchestra and Chorus Tuesday, January 10th at the Orpheum Theater. We've seen the sensational singer in the Met's live HD broadcasts. Now hear him live in concert January 10th. It'll be the musical event of the season. Get tickets now at the Orpheum box office and at phoenixopera.org.
Reitenauer, Height & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reitenauer, Height & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now and then uses her own unique 7 steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.